step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again. This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 344. I am Lisa Sheps, along with guest co-host Mr. Adam Roberts, extraordinaire. You're listening to us on KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM, streaming live at koop.org. Remember, if it's theater, it is on Offstage and On the Air. Please do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your
It is Wednesday, I think it's January 13th, 2016. On the show today, the UT Department of Theater and their show, Hell Drivers of Daytona. Also, our very dear friends, the Vortex Rep, are going to be here talking about their show, Terminus. And of course, we'll have lovely and lively discussions of theater with news and views around the world, as well as Austin, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and places beyond. Well, Adam Roberts.
Lisa Sheps. It's been so long.
It has.
You know, 3 weeks.
It has been. Is that all it's been? 3 weeks?
It feels like it's a lot longer.
I've missed you. Welcome to being co-hosted Offstage and On the Air. Forgive me for not remembering. Have you co-hosted before?
I have not co-hosted.
You have
this
not.
This is my first time on this side of the table.
We have talked about it many, many times.
Mm-hmm,
I'm thrilled to have you here.
I'm thrilled to
but
be
you're
here
at the expense of Miss Nicole Shiro, who is taken ill. She's like, we're going to send out lots of...
Oh, Nicole.
Lots of positive vibes her way.
Right,
she's
now,
got 101 Ooh. Degree temperature. She's just a silly millimeter longer. Anybody remember that?
Victoria Slims.
Benson Hedges, yes. Was it Victoria Slims? Virginia Slims.
She's always
Virginia
been one of those commercials. You should hear her play the melody. You should hear her play the theme song.
Exactly.
She has it down.
Yep. So I want to thank Tracy for another great remix. That was just a wonderful. I learned so much on his show this week. It was really, really wonderful. There may or may not be a backstage at Offstage this week, so we'll have to figure it out. But if you are, you need to get that podcast in order to listen to Backstage It On. Do you listen to our podcast, Adam Roberts?
You know I do. Usually when I've been on it.
Of course you do. Well, the podcast is worth listening to.
No, but I do. I think it's very interesting.
That's where you can hear Backstage at Offstage. That's where we learn a little bit about our guests personally rather than the shows that they're doing. And we found that to be one of the more enlightening, entertaining, interesting, and all those other kind of bloviating
totally
words.
Totally agree.
That they do. So you get that by going to offstageonair.com, signing up for us to send an email directly to you every Friday with with the show. Or you can get us on iTunes. We are right there. And Stitcher. You can stitch it up.
Stitcher. See, every time you say that, I'm like one of these out-of-the-loop people.
Stitcher.
With that whole kind of, I don't know what that is.
Anybody else here know what Stitcher is?
Stitcher?
No idea.
No, Stitcher.
I'm glad I'm not the only. I'm usually the only one, so I'm glad I'm not this time.
Stitcher is an app that plays. It's like Stitcher. I can't. Anyway,
so, is it a music app?
Pardon me?
A music app?
Or it's like a radio app.
Oh, a radio app.
It's got different stations. Gotcha. You can get your podcasts on Stitcher. You can get all sorts of stuff there. So I want to remind folks before we introduce the guests in the house that we are taking the day off week after next. So we will not have a show at all. It will be a special 2-hour remix, and we're not here. So you'll just have to live without us. And I'm talking to you, Adam Roberts.
Sad day.
It is a sad day.
Although Remix is awesome. So
it is.
2 hours of remixes.
Let me try to introduce everybody. And my apologies. I'm going to butcher some names today. I'm just warning everybody. So we're just go left to right, hopefully. Jenny Underwood?
Yes.
Well, now you need to get that microphone and say hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Jenny told me before we went on the air that she will only speak when spoken to, so I just spoke to you.
I'm basically a shy person.
You wouldn't know it on stage.
You are. And then hopefully I have this right. Burton?
Bert Nevers, yes.
Bert Nevers, mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't know whether I yes, yeah, so Bert Nevers. Rudy Ramirez, hello, welcome.
Hi, Lisa.
And Rob Muir, and I know I was going to give us the proper pronunciation.
Mirror.
It looks like, for those of us in Austin, it sort of looks like Mueller, which is pronounced Miller by some people and Muller by others.
But
so.
That's U-E, see. I'm E-U.
Oh, you're good and different.
So, well, actually, it should be Moira.
Moira. That's what we're going
to
call
it's
you,
it's hard enough to get the people to say Mirror. So
except after C. Okay.
And Jacques Collimon, welcome.
Yes.
New
me.
To the show. Lots of newbies on the show today. And then finally, last but certainly not least, is Haley Armstrong.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. So, well, I'm just thrilled to have Adam Roberts here as my co-host before we talk about anything.
As always.
So what's going on with you?
What's going on with me? Well, I think you know about a little collaboration that we have coming up.
We do.
In May, called As Butterflies, between mm-hmm. Ground Floor and Tilt and the Austin Jewish Repertory Theater. And then we have lots of stuff at the Long Center coming up. With
you got Gatsmata.
Gatsmata, the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards.
I believe I'm the only person that does not call it Gatsmata.
I'm pretty sure that's accurate. What do you call it?
I call it the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards.
You must have extra hours in the day.
I have a lot of time. I've got nothing. I have nothing but time in my hands.
Yeah, but we're having a good time with all that.
Burton, you look questioning. Mm-hmm.
I just think that's way too long an acronym.
Oh, it is.
Well, yeah. I'm pretty sure everyone is on the same page about
that
one.
You are not alone thinking
it
that.
It is. It's accurate.
But now that you said it, maybe they'll do something about it.
Maybe.
That's
you
true.
Know, yeah. Get a grassroots movement going.
Call it something else. Let's call it the Gingers.
Well, you know, different possibilities have been thrown around. That has been one.
You know, they call it the, in New York, they call it the Jimmies. So let's call it the Gingers.
Mm-hmm. The Gingers. I think people would be for that.
I would be for it.
Mm-hmm. And why is it that we always have time on our hands? Why isn't the time on our feet?
Yeah.
Why isn't the time in our hair?
In our hair.
I have time in my cooking.
But that wasn't even scripted.
Yeah. So nothing is.
I'm sorry
scripted
that came up.
So the piece of music we heard coming into this was from Lazarus. Mm-hmm. And that was actually, oh my God, I just lost his name. What's his name?
David Bowie.
No, that wasn't. David Bowie wrote it, and it sounds like David Bowie. But it was the guy that plays, he's in Lazarus right now off Broadway, and he played, he's the killer in that HBO show about the mass murderer. He was in 6 Feet Under.
Oh, Michael C. Hall.
Michael C. Hall, thank you.
There we go.
And he is like playing in Lazarus. Lazarus is the show that David Bowie wrote along.
Oh, right,
yeah, that is playing off Broadway right now at the New York Theater. New York Theater Ensemble? I don't remember. I have it written down, but I've, of course, not arranged my pieces of paper in a way that I can see them.
How long has that been running?
Not very long. Mm. It's going to, and it, I believe it is a limited run, which I have a feeling that may not be the case anymore with the passing of Mr. Bowie. And Mr. Bowie's got a relatively long, he started his career studying avant-garde theater back in the day.
I knew this.
No, this is
talking
this is
over
we,
each other.
We like this.
Okay,
it adds a certain amount of energy and a je ne sais quoi.
His first group was in around 1965 or 66, well before we knew him, and it was called. He actually called himself, of all things, Davy Jones.
Oh yeah, I think I knew
his
that.
His name is Davy Jones.
David Jones. So it was Davy Jones in the lower third, and it's actually great stuff. Because it's not like the Bowie we know, but you can hear Bowie in it.
Sure. Very interesting.
So I don't know if anybody was in New York in the 80s, but he was also, he played to very good reviews, The Elephant Man on Broadway. I don't know. I don't know that he replaced Philip Ingham, but he did a great job. And if anybody listens to NPR, they've been playing a lot of talking about him, obviously. And playing some of the, I guess it's, what do you say when you play dialogue from The Elephant Man from back when he did it?
It's called playing dialogue.
Thank you.
Darn clever.
You know, I'm not very smart, Burton, and I appreciate you here to keep me on my toes.
You know, what else he did was, if you remember, he was a spectacular Andy Warhol in the movie Basquiat.
Yeah. Oh. He did many, many movies, and I think his entree into theater that we know of was Elephant Man on Broadway, mm-hmm. and Lazarus off Broadway, hmm. And of course he changed music. He changed music, yeah. Which is amazing, and he will be missed. And I just need to shout out and just wrap my arms around Nicole Shiro, who was really quite moved to tears when she heard about it. Mm. And she had told me on the phone, she said, you know, she's heard about people that get really upset when celebrities or famous people die. And she's always sort of rolled her eyes at them and said, you know, grow up, get a job. But she was moved to tears when she heard about Bowie. And so he really spoke to her. And that really talks to how the effect that artists have on us.
You know, far be it for me to plug a YouTube clip, but I was hipped to a guy. He's a Canadian astronaut, not making this up. He's up in a space station, and he's a musician, and he recorded a cover of Space Oddity.
Right.
And they did a video of it, and he's in the capsule using weightlessness. It's really pretty remarkable, especially in the circumstances, because there's moments when he's looking up through this kind of glass window at the top of the thing into the ether. And the lyrics are suggesting moving on to the next plane.
Sure.
And here's David having just passed. It's really, I recommend it. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And that also is that the piece of music I played from Lazarus, which was all about death and dying. Mm-hmm. And it's really quite fascinating. And from what I understand, he was active with Lazarus till the day he passed. Mm-hmm. So he will be missed. Also will be missed is Liz Suedos, who also passed away. And she, anybody else familiar with her other than me? Elizabeth Suedos. She was very, very popular back in, in 78, she had her big hit called Runaways.
Oh, Runaways.
Yeah. And she did socially engaging social musicals with Rudy? Social justice kind of flair to it. And she passed away, and she also provided the music for Andre Serban's adaption of Medea at La Mama, etc. And she's been around for a while, and she passed away. And we had just talked about her on this program a few months ago, I think.
Really? Runaways has some great music. It really does.
I don't know it very well.
It's a little throwback. But
I should have played
some. It's definitely of its era.
I should have played some. Maybe I'll throw it in when we when at Backstage at Offstage. Maybe it'll close out our Backstage at Offstage, which I think we might have a short one just for the heck of it. So she passed away. She was 64.
Mm.
And I will you still need me? Will you still feed me? Anyway.
When I'm dead.
So we have a couple of closings that have announced, and one of them is Allegiance. Which I was just talking about today in a training.
Yeah.
Wow. I got to see the sneak preview of Allegiance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where?
I think it was filmed. They presented it here in Austin. I think
as a film.
Yeah. It wasn't the Broadway version. It was an older version.
Right. Huh. It's been on. I believe it played L.A. 2 years ago mixed reviews. And so, we're talking about the musical about Japanese internment, which, by the way, is Presidential Order 9066, I think. I could be wrong about that, but probably not. And this is by George Takei, who I like to call George Takei. Just saying. So it's closing, and then on January 24th, Spring Awakening is closing. That's the Deaf West production.
Mm-hmm.
So
you mean it's not Takei?
It's Takei.
It's Takei.
He says it's Takei.
It is Takei.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
He says it's Takei, but I'm with you. We'll call you and me. We'll call him Takei.
Yes, we will.
Okay, Rob. So
I heard that Spring Awakening was awesome. I have not gotten to see that production of it, but I heard it's pretty
well. Interestingly enough, one Lisa Sheps, mm-hmm. it will be in the audience on closing night.
Nice.
So I had to see it.
Well,
so,
yeah.
So I didn't even know it was closing. I was just saying, mm-hmm. well, I should look into Spring Awakening. Oh, I was reading an article about Marlee Matlin, who was mm-hmm. in Spring Awakening, and she did a whole article. It was either in the Times or in Playbill.com, talking about how Spring Awakening winds to a close. And I went, what winds to a close? What?
I think it was limited, wasn't it?
It was limited.
Yeah, that's what.
Yeah. So and sales weren't bustling.
Hmm.
I mean, I was surprised to find tickets. There were many seats available for closing night. Yeah.
When is it?
Closing night?
Yeah.
The 24th of January.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Sunday night. So I mm-hmm. think that should be an awesome show to see.
Yeah, I would think so. I think there'll be a lot of great things.
A lot of good things. So mm-hmm. those are closing. So then this is something that I read the article and I just it made me laugh, and it's about the London International Mime Festival, which is going on right now. And oh, you know what? I don't think I printed it. Yeah, I did. There it is. The London International Mime Festival. So I have this question for everybody here: why do people hate mime so much?
People don't know.
Oh. Yes, they do. There's a lot of vitriol.
I think it's one of those cliches.
There's
a snowball effect, like the cliche that clowns are scary, even though they truly are.
They are scary. They're scary. You know, I challenge you to wake up in the middle of the night and find a clown standing at the foot of your bed. Believe me, I've been through this.
I think if I woke up in the middle of the night and Charlie Rose was standing at the foot of my bed, it would scare me. You know, I think it's the circumstance rather than the grease paint.
True.
I was waiting. I thought there was going to be a one-liner.
Foot of my bed that doesn't belong there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you never know, but it depends. I mean, you know, if, there's certain people I'd be fine, perfectly okay with. Just saying.
But I tend to agree with what Burton said. I think people hate mimes because other people hate mimes.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
I think there's something to the fact that they're often street performers who are silent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that, like, that we're so used to people, like, engaging us with, like, noise and with sound, that, like, having us be there and, like, and the idea that you can't—they can't break and talk to you, or they can't break and make noise—I think is the root of the trend.
So, who here was in a mime troupe? Anybody other than me? Well, I'm a child of the '70s, and that's what we—I mean, mime was.
Were you seriously?
Yeah, I was in a mime troupe.
I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm just saying.
I was in a mime troupe. Well, it was very popular in the '70s. It did not have the negative connotation that it's got these days. So, really, I'm the only one. Jenny, no, not you.
Silence.
Well, because I'm not.
Why did she think you would be? What does that say?
I know Jenny enough to say her and I are rather in the same, clearly very similar age group. I don't know you two enough to make that assumption. But were y'all in a mine troop?
No.
Although I
now,
think.
Did you notice the attitude with which you answered that? Like, no, I would not be caught dead in a mine tree.
Did I say that?
I think he was just relieved you weren't actually asking him how old he is.
It really was not.
That'll
that
come later when we're backstage.
My response was not that fraught at all.
No.
Well, evidently the mime festival in London is more than just mime. Evidently, it's a lot of circus performers and that type of that type of thing. And I believe that the definition, and I'll use air quotes for mime in this case, is rather broad. And it's anything that does not use a lot of vocal stuff. Stuff. That's a technical term.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you should have a member of that troupe on to be interviewed on the radio.
I might. That'd be good because they can't get a word in edgewise. Is that what
because there'd be a lot of dead air.
But actually, I would encourage folks to read this article because it really makes you look at mime in a different way, and it's not going to be the standard thing. So when I think of mime, of course, I think of somebody in whiteface walking against the wind, pulling a rope, stuck in a box, like this.
I think the first time I saw a mime live was in New Orleans, and I was probably like 4 or 5, and I remember it was just really like, I remember how quality it was, you know?
Yeah.
That takes some like skill.
It is not it easy really to do. It takes a lot skill. Of control. So my homework for everybody here is to join a mime troupe.
Was there a mime troupe that went through the vortex a couple of years ago?
There is an Austin mime troupe. There is one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
like Whiteface Mime?
No. I mean, like, it was they did a show at the Vortex. Like out of town for like a few weeks, but it was various people were in it who I know personally, and it was they had a lot of fun doing it. So.
And one of those people was my age. I mean, 21 years old. It was 2 years ago, but yeah, young people do enjoy miming. I think it is a little bit bizarre because it's a medium that doesn't use words, and in daily life when we encounter that, it's a bit, you know, it's strange.
Mm-hmm.
But they also had a show at Central Market, and you know that public miming is you know, if we think, you know, voluntary walk into a theater miming is strange, imagine public miming where you're just encountering everybody.
Well, and that's what I mean, most people, I think, probably if they have encountered mimes, it's been on the street somewhere,
because
they're a realm of street performer.
Absolutely.
It's a very public medium.
Anyway, I order everybody to go read that article, and it may change your mind. So I'm on a one-woman crusade to get people to stop hating mime as
change
much
your
as
mind.
They.
Well, I think it's a noisy world, and people resent silence.
You know what? I think you're right. People, especially Americans, the silence is not an easy thing to deal with.
Although when he mentioned that as a street performer, they're silent, for me, as a street performer, that's something they'd have going for them.
True. So and I don't know if anybody saw the movie, The Aristocrats.
I know of
about
it.
I don't like that kind of humor, but boy, did I laugh a lot. But the funniest one was the mime doing the joke. So those of you who are interested, rent The Aristocrats. It's hard to not say Aristocats.
Not to be
Everybody
but it's The Aristocrats.
Everybody wants to be a cat.
Everybody. The final little thing I want to talk about is an article in Playbill that there will be a link and what I was going to be playing music from, but I found that it's very difficult. It's called 10 Famous Songsters You Never Knew Were Musical Theater Writers.
Hmm.
And it's a whole bunch of people like Carol Bayer-Sager.
Oh, yeah.
Who her musical that she wrote was Georgie. The ill-fated Georgie Girl musical.
Did they use that song?
I don't know.
That was probably why it was ill-fated.
Probably.
If the only thing most people know about that character from that movie is the song Georgie Girl, and they come to a musical about it, and they're not playing Georgie Girl.
Maybe. My guess is they would have had to, but this it happened in 1970 in New York.
I think she also wrote a lot with Peter Allen, didn't she? Boy from Oz and a lot of those songs, I think, were partnerships with her.
I don't know, but she also worked on They're Playing Our Song.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So Jimmy Webb, who wrote Up, Up, and mm-hmm. Away in MacArthur Park, he did The Children's Crusade, Scandal, and Dancing Girl.
Hmm.
So there were a lot of these. This will also be linked on our website, offstageonair.com. What I want to do, Randy Newman is in here.
Randy Newman.
But none of the shows that they did were particularly famous. Or they didn't do it.
Hence,
none of
you didn't know they were songsters.
Didn't know they were songsters, and very hard, Ray Davies.
Yeah, he's actually their show on the West End is doing really well.
Oh,
yeah,
it's autobiographical.
Yes, but that plays the Kinks music, right?
Yeah,
yeah. So he wrote a musical called Chorus Girls. Back in the day.
Well, Arthur was kind of a musical.
Arthur was amazing.
The TV show.
It was a BBC TV show, and it was in the height of the Kinks, and Ray wrote like basically a score for it.
Oh.
Well, that's possible this is talking about theater musicals, so it's quite possible that they didn't make it on there because of that. So it's very interesting. So we are going to play, and I've got to find out who did this. There was a musical called Whoop Up, which is the only one I could actually find music for. you know what? I think I have the Wikipedia page here somewhere. I always come very well prepared for these things, and I don't. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tell you who wrote it when we come back from this break, because I can't find it. So we will be back after this break, and we're going to learn and talk about what's going on at the Vortex when we come back. So nobody leave. Let's hear a little bit from Whoop Up. This is a song called Flattery, because you know what? It will get you anywhere.
Mm. Oh, you and your fancy flattery.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Adam Roberts, guest hosting for Nicole Shiro. We have been talking with Rudy Ramirez, Gabby Randall. No, we're not talking to Gabby. Haley Armstrong, Jacques Collimon, Jenny Underwood.
Yep.
Burton Aver, Rob Muir. That's a hard name. let's talk about what's going on at the Vortex. We've been wanting to talk to you guys for a while about this because I've been talking to you, Rudy, about this. And all I hear is Terminus, Terminus, Terminus. So tell me what this is all about.
Well, Terminus is it's a world premiere that we're really excited about. It's by this playwright, Gabriel Jason Dean. He is a UT MFA grad. We did his production Qualities of Starlight there a couple of years ago.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, we really had a great time with it and got a lot of great attention for it. And he's written a series of plays about his hometown in Georgia, where he grew up. And this is both Qualities of Starlight and Terminus are part of this series of plays. It kind of looks at this town, sort of like economic collapse, deals a lot with class issues.
Race and class, right?
Yeah. Like the series deals with this is very much the play that engages the most with race in particular. And it's based a lot on his grandmother's life and his experience with his grandmother with dementia and sort of her own family history. Some of the stories are right out of the Dean family tree. Wow. And
so there's an autobiographical part to this.
Absolutely, absolutely. But then there were changes made to engage with the modern aspects of the racial history that he's talking about.
Well, like, for instance?
Well, for instance, giving Eller Freeman a mixed-race grandson.
Okay.
And a young woman coming through town who's also African-American.
Okay.
And a husband as well who's African-American, but he's passed.
Which is why she has a mixed-race son.
Indeed, indeed.
That would sort of work that way, right?
Yeah.
I read a little bit about it, pardon me?
Always so insightful.
I'm pretty smart.
Over here.
Yep.
So, of course, I had to go when I heard that the character's name was Eller, you know what I thought of.
Aunt Eller.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oklahoma, which I get to see again this
year. Oh, the farmer and the cow.
Can't be friends. So this is a hard hitting piece.
Absolutely.
Who wants to come see it other than everybody?
Gabriel and Gabby Randall, who couldn't be here today. She's basically doing my job in the theater right now. She's our AD and dramaturg. I know we really talked a lot about grandmothers in particular and how a lot of us, you know, we have people in our family who we love but who are also capable of saying things that shame us and being capable of that love and that cruelty. So it's very much kind of about how do we reconcile these histories within our own families. Like these are things playing out at the most intimate level and we got a script that I love and a cast that I love and designers that I love. So I think that people who want that catharsis, I think this is catharsis is a good word to use around this play.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah. Sounds like it. So Haley, you're playing. What are you playing?
I am playing Finch Finch.
Finch Finch. I saw that. I love the character name.
Yeah, that's
a great
awesome.
Name.
Is that indeed a first and last name?
Well, it's a nickname.
It's a nickname.
I would say. Yes, her real name is Danielle.
Okay. I can see where they get Finch. Oh, Finch.
Wonderful.
No, I'm lying. I don't.
Oh, well, then never mind.
Okay. And you're the person that comes through town.
Yes.
And a love interest.
Yes.
Lovely. That's fun.
It always is fun. Quite fun. Yep.
And Jacques, what do you play?
Yes. Hi, I'm playing J-Bo. He's Eller's grandson, and I mean, as Rudy had mentioned, I'm a mixed race boy, and besides Integrator's Manual, which is a show I did short of a year ago, this is pretty much one of the few times that I've been able to play a person that identifies as mixed race and inside of a show that is very much in conversation of biracial identity, of mixed
fantastic.
Person identity.
Well, it's fantastic because if you take what, you know, right now, the you know people of mixed race origin they're sort of getting a really tough ride in the climate of social justice and racial justice and things like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's all about perspective, I think, mm-hmm. you know, because as a mixed person, I suppose I can attest to this with some validity. You know, it used to be that I would think, oh, man, I'm not, you know, white enough to hang out with some people. I'm sure. not black enough to hang out with some people. And mm-hmm. as that outlier, you have a unique perspective. And there's either this choice of saying, well, I can't relate to anybody, or I can relate to everybody.
Right.
And yeah. and I think the latter is the much more positive choice. And there's been a lot of that resonates within J-Bo for me. And it's been some really rich kind of meat to dig into in developing this piece. And this is something I've been working on with Gabe for quite some time now and developing with everybody here. So it's really great that, you know, we're finally getting a world premiere.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Really excited. So.
And Jenny, who do you play?
I play the grandmother. You know,
Hiller.
The old broad. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's got to be a stretch for you.
Oh, tremendous. Tremendous.
Tell me about her.
Well, she has dementia. So
that's got to sort of be fun to play.
It is. She kind of goes in and out of my real age as well as 12 years old.
Right.
So it's fun. She's got a sense of humor, but in the end of all, she probably isn't really, when you peel back the onion layer, she's not the nicest person.
Right. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're
is.
In Qualities of Starlight too. Yeah.
Yes.
Is that
I did.
Right? Yeah. So what is, how is it to do the same playwright, you know, two premieres like
well,
that?
I just think The World Rises and Sets In, Gabriel Jason Dean. He's just a awesome. Fabulous playwright, person, father. I mean, you know, the superlative. Of course, Qualities of Starlight had been done elsewhere. This is the first go-around for this one.
For
so
this one. Mm-hmm.
There were, you know, as we were working through it, he would make some changes and rewrites and whatnot to make it better, to make the story more clear.
Sure.
Right. I need to go off on a quick tangent here. And Haley, I'm going to ask your assistance to this. I need you to choose a number between 15 and 23.
17.
17. That's a good number. Let's see what you chose, shall we?
Hi, I'm Robert Biederman, playing Captain George Brackett in the cast of South Pacific on Tour, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin 91.7 FM.
Robert Biederman, he's actually, we've chosen him a couple of times. So there you go. So back to the show. So it sounds like there's a lot of rich meat here in the show, as somebody intoned, and it sounds wonderful. Are we able to hear a little bit of it right now?
Absolutely. So we're going to hear a little bit. This is from Act One of Terminus, and J-Bo's daddy has just come by, and Eller scared him off using her trusty rifle. That's where we're going to begin.
Great.
So I don't like the father.
I have a feeling you don't like many people. Okay, this is Haley Armstrong, Jenny Underwood, and Jacques Coleman doing a scene from the Vortex's production of Terminus.
Did I hear a gunshot?
No. Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
Everything okay?
She ain't Jesus.
Oh, shoot. Nanny, this is...
Finch. My name's Finch.
That we girl came out of your bedroom.
She...
Well, J-Bo. You've taken a lover. Never thought I'd live to see the day.
No, Look, Nanny, she saved your life last night, and...
Oh. Well, thank you. My name is Rosella, but you can call me Eller.
Nice to meet you again, Eller.
You sure are a pretty thing. Even if you do look like a boy.
She's
thank
not
you.
A... I'm sorry, you know, sometimes she gets things mixed up. And...
It's cool, I get it all the time.
Yeah, well, she's right. It's not about you looking like a boy. About you being pretty. You want something to eat? No meat.
You girl, you better eat something.
Nanny.
You're too skinny.
She don't need your advice. I'm sorry.
I ain't having a spell right now. I'm entertaining your company, boy.
I could use some entertainment.
J-Bo, you're outnumbered.
I see that.
Oh, but he's right. Sometimes my mind does go, you know.
I feel you. I got the same problem.
You do?
No, not really. I was just trying to be polite.
Oh, all right. You know that song?
I don't think so, no.
Sometimes I hear it just like a broken record. And then other times I hear that old church bell at Bethel Baptist that used to ring before they sold it for scrap to buy some unleavened bread. Everybody told Preachman Bishop that summer to just use some baked bread, that God wouldn't care none. And he told everybody that if they wanted the body of Jesus Christ in their blood, they were going to have to eat the holy bread from Italy, which is where Jesus died. Oh, hush up, you pervert.
I didn't say
Not
anything.
Not you, him.
I'm sorry, she's, you know.
Paul.
Paul?
Well, Jesus. But he told me I could call him Paul. This is my picture of him. Funny thing about it, Paul's sitting on that rock looking at a bright light in the sky, and I can't figure out whether he's in heaven looking at earth or on earth looking at heaven. Pino, what day is it?
Tuesday.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Gave birth to you on a Tuesday, named you Pino.
Nanny, Finch isn't Pino.
Well, I know that's Pino, right there. Like a revelation she was. Doctor said that girl drank herself to death. Probably because of how she sang. You sing that deep, life just don't compare.
Annie, she don't want to hear none of your stories.
What kind of music did she sing?
Gospel. J-Bo's got her gift.
You sing gospel music.
Plays it on the guitar, too. His mama played the piano. Make him sing for you.
Oh, I'll have to do that.
You want some sugar with your oatmeal?
I like sweet things.
You know, she was only 25 when she passed. Doctor said it was the Tylenol.
What was?
Tylenol killed her. Pino was sick and running a fever and washed the Tylenol down with some gin. And her liver quit working that night.
That's not exactly how it went.
Am I telling this story or you?
Well, this is morbid stuff. Come on now, we just met Finch.
I'm talking about your mama, son. Have some respect.
A lot of ghosts on your family tree, huh, Grams?
Yeah, something like that.
Are y'all using protection?
Nanny!
Because it happens fast. One minute it's, oh God, oh glory be. And the next minute it's, oh God, what did I do? I sure didn't think I'd get pregnant when I did.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry, Finch.
No, dude, I love this woman!
Oh, that was brilliant. Awesome. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes.
On so many different levels. And unfortunately, we're running out of time. When do you guys open?
We open Friday, January 15th.
Right around the corner. Indeed. This Friday, yes.
Indeed, we're going right back to the theater.
Playing through when?
Playing through February 6th.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Fantastic.
I really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
thank
us.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. So that was Rudy Ramirez, Jenny Underwood, Haley Armstrong, and Jacques Coleman of the Vortex's production of Terminus at the Vortex Theater from January 15th through February 5th. For more information, you may visit vortexrep.org, and we will be right back. Okay, we are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air on KOOP with me, Lisa Sheps, and substitute wonderful guest host, Mr. Adam Roberts.
Why, thank you.
It's so lovely spending time with you again.
Always love spending time with you, Ms.
So
Sheps.
As usual, we're running behind. So locally, oh, by the way, Whoop Up was written by, the music was Mark Charlap, who wrote Up, Up and Away and Other Things.
And other things.
Other things, because I already put the piece of paper down. we're running late, of course, so we're just going to go through this really quick. But I guess, you know, hot off the presses, very, very hot off the presses, is Jamie Grant is leaving the Lung Center.
True.
Right.
So that is just actually out just as of yesterday.
I have to say, Jamie has done amazing, amazing things for the Lung Center. Many wonderful accomplishments.
One of those is Getsmata.
One of those is Getsmata, and many other things. And he will be sorely missed.
He will be sorely missed. He's a wonderful person.
Yep.
He came on the show right after he took the position, and he will be missed. He's staying on for a while, and then they're going to be on a nationwide search for an artistic director. I vote for Adam Roberts or Rudy Ramirez. Maybe
that
the two of you.
That would be executive director. Little different skill set.
Oh, that's true. Executive director. Well, whatever. Then I vote for Lisa Shep.
Yes.
The other thing I wanted to talk about is Spectrum Theater Company is doing a tribute to Boyd Vance as a fundraiser. And I'm really, really happy that they're doing that on a lot of levels. I'm just so happy that Spectrum is out there doing work.
I thought you said a tribute to boy bands, and it made me very good that I realized what you actually
said. I would like to see Boyd Vance in a boy band. I'm sure that they could probably do whatnot. So most people know, or if you don't know who Boyd Vance was, he is an African-American gentleman who had a show, a company called Pro Arts Collective here. Passed away around, I want to say 2003, 2004, somewhere around there, right after I got in town. So I did not get to know him very well. But people may know the name because of the Boyd Vance Theater at the Carver Center. Mm-hmm. The fundraiser is on January 17th at the Austin Playhouse. My gosh, where's my mind? Same place it is always. For more information, spectrumatx.org. And finally, speaking of Austin Playhouse, right now Disgraced also opens on the 15th. Mm. And it looks very interesting. That's the Texas premiere of Ayan Akhtar's. Did I pronounce that right?
Ayan Akhtar, yeah.
Yeah. 2013 Pulitzer Prize winning play. Mm-hmm. So it is directed by Don Toner. And it has Molly Karish, who's in a lot of their stuff, Ben Wolfe, Crystal Bird Cavell, who I do not know, and Harold Mm-mm. Fish, and Michael Miller. So
Crystal Bird Cavell was in the very first thing I directed in Austin.
Get really? Into it. What was that?
It was a little piece about the life of Emma Goldman that I directed for a radical encuentro, that like radical activist that was happening. And they were like, can you do this little thing about Emma Goldman? I'm like, sure, I'll put something together. And that's how I met Crystal. And I'm so thrilled that she's doing this show.
Oh, how great. Amazing. And when was that?
That was the very beginning of 2007.
Oh. Lovely. See, I love how everything comes around.
It does.
So now let's just jump right into a very quick today, or actually yesterday in theater
yesterday
history.
Yesterday in theater history.
This will be Tuesday's Today in Theater mm-hmm. History, because truth were out, we're pre-recording this.
Oh, no.
So I had to, I have to tell the truth. I haven't found the way to, they don't publish this, and I cheat my way through it because Playbill publishes this, and I can't figure out how to do it in the future. Because they know what happened in the past. This has already been written. Anyway, so in 1932, Leslie Howard starred in a play called The Animal Kingdom. It's a comedy about a man whose wife has sapped his vitality. It ran 23 weeks.
There we go. 3 weeks.
1986, Terrence McNally's It's Only a Play, opened at Manhattan Theater Club. It had Joanna Gleason, mm-hmm. Christine Baranski, David Garrison, Paul Benedict.
Oh, what a
amongst
cast.
Others, I know. And in 1987, on the day before yesterday, the box office opened to begin selling tickets for a play called, and I'm not quite sure how to pronounce this. It looks like Les Miserables.
Oh, I think it's Les Miserables.
I think it is. Les Mis started selling tickets. During the first week, they set a new record. They took in $1.7 million. Wow. It started previews in February, and it is currently the third longest Broadway show in history. Let's see. So also in 2012, the Gershwin's Porgy and Bess opened.
Mm-hmm.
When we're going to hear her lovely tones here pretty soon, Audra McDonald and Norm Lewis, amongst other people. And it won the Tony Award for the Best Revival, and as well as a Tony for Audra McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
That's a shock.
I know.
Tony for Audra McDonald.
Can you believe it? Audra She's got like McDonald. Nine, doesn't she?
Six, I think.
Yeah.
Also in 2014, yesterday, beautiful Carole King musical opened. Still playing mm-hmm. Even as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
Birthdays. Jack McGowan. Don't know who he is, but it was birthday.
Happy birthday,
1894. Jack. Tex Ritter, 1905. Andre DeShields, 1946. Mm-hmm. Is he still around, Andre DeShields?
I think so.
He must be. Oliver Platt, who I love. And Simon Russell Beale, who I do not know. Anybody else know? And I didn't check locals, but I do know one very special local person is having their birthday. yesterday on Tuesday.
Two people.
No, not Tuesday. Oh, no.
Yesterday, though.
Jenny Underwood had her birthday on Monday. Underwood. And Rudy Ramirez, you have a birthday?
Yeah, on Monday.
On Monday. That's not who I was thinking of.
Oh.
But Mazel Tov, Patty Neftivin, co-director of Ground Floor Theater, his birthday is on Tuesday.
Yep.
So wonderful. So I wonder what happened 9 months ago today that everybody's parents were a little randy.
Yep.
That's what I want to know. We will take a little break now. What are we going to play on our break? I'm looking for the right piece of paper. You know what? Just because I love Hamilton and I forgot the woman that plays, what's her name, Skylar. Not the one he marries, but the other one. And she's just fantastic.
Angelica Skylar is the character.
I forgot the actress's name, but here she is. I'll be seeing her seeing this show when I'm in New York.
Nice.
I'm not. I can't get tickets. We'll be right back. So this is what it feels like to match with someone. Okay, we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Shipps and Adam Roberts. We're having so much fun.
We are having a blast.
And this is actually a show that we talked about on this show a few weeks ago, and I'm just so thrilled that I have here the composer and the lyricist of the show, Burton Aver. God, I knew I was going to do
it. You got it right the first time.
I got it right the first time. I screwed up. And Rob Muirer.
You added a syllable.
Yeah, that was perfect.
So this is a show called Hell Drivers of Daytona.
Yes.
Sounds like all sorts of fun.
It does.
It is that.
And that promo artwork is brilliant.
It is brilliant.
I love it.
That's actually what drove me to look at it originally.
There were a couple of iterations where we were looking for somebody who can nail our show with the artwork, and that person came along.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And we went, yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah.
There
amazing.
We go.
So tell us about the show. Who are these Hell Drivers?
These Hell Drivers are, amazingly enough, drivers. It's a race car musical.
Ah.
And it
specifically, is it NASCAR?
No.
They would say no.
Oh, okay.
We do not call this a NASCAR musical.
Okay.
It is only called that frequently.
Oh, I've
incessantly by everyone else.
Oh,
I have not heard it called that, but don't be upset when the music we play after this mentions NASCAR.
Oh, well, you know, as the character in House of Cards would say, I couldn't possibly comment.
So, but it's just that we do not call it that because we cannot call it that.
I got it. We'll get you a cease and desist.
It tends to be called that.
It takes place in Daytona Beach in the mid-60s, and the score is pretty heavily mid-60s.
Awesome.
And
is it like rock and roll kind of score? Or
yeah, there's rock in it. There's a lot of pop. There's girl group stuff.
Oh,
there's
cool.
There's songs that are more what a conventional Broadway audience would expect, that, you know, it's not all nailed in one genre.
It's a pastiche.
There's a lot of pastiche.
Uh-huh. That's
there's
awesome.
There's a lot
My
of
favorite.
Pastiche. I had some fun with that.
Yeah, I bet.
And it's basically a hoot. You know, if one is looking for art with a capital A, one might look elsewhere.
Yeah, well, so this is sort of like a check your brains at the door kind of piece?
No. I would not go that far.
There is nothing wrong with check your brains at the door performances.
Well,
it was not a judgment in any way, shape, or form.
Are keeping their brains enough to get the jokes.
Yes.
Check your pretensions at the door.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
So now,
well,
that's going to be hard for me.
weren't going to say.
Untrue.
Has this been performed before?
We had a reading just last summer in Chicago, which is how Danny came on board.
Okay.
Danny
Herman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
where in Chicago? What theater?
The Skokie.
Okay. So you were up in Skokie.
We were in Skokie,
okay.
Yes.
Oh, you know what? I knew that. I spoke to Danny about this because I berated him on Skokie not actually being Chicago. But go on.
Well, yeah, that's like saying the Valley's not Los Angeles.
That's true.
Yeah, right.
Well, again, we talked about my snobbery earlier, and so I lived in Chicago for a long time, and anything that wasn't Chicago was not Chicago.
Yeah, they said, well, we're going to take you to see a show in the city tonight, and you know, 5 minutes later, we were at the theater. So
there you go.
Yeah, that's
in
right.
Chicago.
Yeah. Chicago.
And this is a staged reading, but a very staged reading, right? Or a staged...
Yeah.
Or
it's
yeah.
It's a workshop.
Yeah, workshop.
Well, yeah, but it's... There's a lot more production values than we had in Skokie, excuse me.
You can say Chicago. I'm happy to call this Chicago.
Much more than a reading.
Yeah. I've heard Danny's been on the props and all kinds of stuff.
The university is throwing everything they've got.
That's fantastic.
They really are.
This is the first time we're performing it with a live band.
How many people had to write out the charts?
What's your instrumentation for that?
Guitar,
keyboard, bass, drums.
Oh, okay. Love it. Awesome.
And we've had this workshopped at a college in Wyoming and a college in Orange County. And lots of different iterations of it. But this is the first time. With a band.
And so exciting.
So now this is also part of, and I know I don't have the name right, it's the New Works Music Festival, something like that with UT, and it's the actors are high school students, is that correct?
No.
No, okay.
This is Texas Musical Theater Workshop, I think, right? I think that's the...
I don't have my piece of paper, so I'm wrong. Good.
We're underqualified to answer that.
I believe that's...
I'm going to fire my research assistant.
You are the second person today to say... So these are going to be high school students.
Well, you know why? You know where I got that? I got that right from the UT page with the Hell Drivers of Daytona, right on in the same paragraphs.
Because they were going to do this last summer, but someone became ill. And then I believe that was because it was a summertime, that was a workshop that was going to be accepting high school students.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
This is a combination of UT students and some professional actors.
Oh, lovely.
I would have to say that the show sails pretty close to the wind for high school students.
Mm-hmm.
We might get some pushback from the community if we stage this with high school students.
I love that term, though, sails pretty close to the wind.
Right?
I read a lot of British novels.
Lovely. I was listening to the BBC World News Service today. They were talking about somebody being gobstoppered. I love that.
Gobsmacked.
Yes. So when does this play? It's only two performances, correct?
Friday and Saturday night.
January 15th
and 16th.
I have
my tickets for Saturday.
Yay, good for you.
Looking forward.
And which theater in UT is it playing?
The Brocket, I think.
Yeah, it is the Oscar G. Brocket
Look
Theater.
Look at that.
Well, that's great. We're unfortunately like way out of time at this point. But what
that just
else?
Means people.
What else could? What final thoughts could you have to induce people to love the idea of this piece?
There's bent.
Yeah, there's a maybe I could sum it up. There's a lyric that I can quote.
Please.
The girls are almost naked too.
Ah, and there we have it.
Well, you only gave us 10 seconds.
I know, that's the lowest
common denominator.
You could have taken 30.
I could have talked to the Brechtian references, but you know, that would take some time.
I will say one thing. I will say,
please.
This is the way I often describe it, is that it's a show whose exterior is glitzy and crazy and sick. But underneath, the engine that runs it is very traditional.
Lovely.
And still sick.
Because we are all lovers of classical musical theater.
Fantastic.
Well, here's what I'd like to do, gentlemen, if you don't mind, is I would love for you guys to stick around, join us backstage, and we can talk more about this show. For those people that are listening on the podcast, which I think many of my listeners get it on the podcast.
They should.
Would you stay with us and come backstage?
Sure.
But of course.
Wonderful. Again, thanks for coming on the show, and we will see you backstage. That was Burton Avare and Rob Muir.
Combinatorics are going to say you're going to get it Muir, a certain percentage of the time.
I'm of sure. Hell Drivers of Daytona, playing at the Oscar G. Brockett Theater at UT on January 15th and 16th. For more information, utexas.edu/fineArts. Forgive me for this piece of music. We filled this city. That was so much fun.
It was a blast.
I had a great time. I can't wait to go backstage and talk to them more.
Yes.
So, you say this is airing tomorrow?
Thank you so much for coming on and co-hosting with us.
I can't wait to do it next time. Nicole Shiro, I don't want you to be sick or anything, but hey,
we'll get her sick. Bam. But this was an absolute dream and an absolute pleasure.
It was a blast.
And we are pre-recording this, which is a different energy than doing it live. And so we'll get you live, and we'll have a lot of fun.
Anything you want
to talk about before we leave? Anything other than Gatsmata, which you already talked about?
Gatsmata?
Yep.
I would say that I would like to come back so that we can have a little powwow on As Butterflies.
Because, well, we will definitely have As Butterflies
our
on.
Our friends have to talk about that.
That is true. Well, stand by for Austin Monitor News if you're listening on the broadcast. If you're listening on the podcast, stand by for Backstage at Onstage. That's where we have all the good stuff. And you can find that by going to offstageonair.com and putting your name in, and we'll send it to you every week, or going to iTunes or Stitcher. And if you're at iTunes, give us a review. We want a review.
Yeah,
give us a review.
Who doesn't?
Anyway, come back next week. Nicole and I will be here looking at what's happening off stage and on the air. I think. Hold on, I've got a stall for just a moment because I didn't set it up. Now we're going to look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, folks.
Late one night.
Well, curtain has just come down on Squeaky, the musical, the story of a hapless young mouse desperately searching for love in the big city of Boise, Idaho, but finds instead...
I feel like this is like the 30th revival of Squeaky.
It is. And thankfully, it's done here at our theater. But we're here backstage amongst the dumpsters while the yes. stagehands are cleaning up all the droppings that have been finding their way onto the stage floor inside. And we are lucky enough to have joining us here backstage, Bert Nevers and Rob Muir. Yeah, I got it. I had to think
Thumbs
about it.
Thumbs up all around.
Adam Roberts.
Hey there.
All of us. So welcome backstage, you guys.
Thank you. You know, I hate to display my ignorance, but when you said Squeaky the Musical, I thought it was agitprop. I thought it was Squeaky From.
Oh!
I never think of those things before I do it, and what made me think of it is right before we went on the air, your chair squeaked.
It did. It's true. Yeah, and so, your and mic just squeaked. So
yes, my mic squeaked.
We have our own Foley artists.
So, yeah, that would be that. That musical is called Assassins.
I am unworthy yes, exactly. of your love.
So, gentlemen, you guys are not from, you don't live currently in the great state of Texas.
I was born and raised in San Antonio.
Yeah, I've heard of that place.
I made my home in Austin for many years before I moved to Southern
Did you?
California.
Did you go to college here?
I spent
because there is a school
a
here.
Year at the University of Texas yes. at Austin.
Okay,
when it was the only one. it was an abbreviated scholastic career.
Okay, mm-hmm. And how did you find your way to theater?
I was fortunate enough to I did a little theater in high school, and then. In our last year,
what show did you do? In which give us like your favorite show from your high school days.
Well,
what? Come on!
Didn't everybody do the Fantastics in high
school?
And what did you? Were you in it as a performer?
Amos Babcock Bell and me, the girl's father.
Yeah, Planet Radish.
So we had this really remarkable Christian brother named Brother Alexis who came down and turned our little high school. Into a place that was actually reviewed by the theater critics in town.
Wow.
Because he brought a level to what we did that we barely even knew what he was doing. He was just a brilliant guy and a total nutcase, too. Lots of fun. And so he planted the seed of love for musical theater, especially
right.
in me. And then what really happened, I was going through all my rock and roll stuff. Hair down to here and playing until 2 o'clock in the morning and coming home in the middle of the night and listening in this was during the 70s and listening to the latest Sondheim show. And you know what a run he had then. It was
sure.
it was Company and then Follies and then Night no. Music and then Pacific Overtures and then Sweeney, and it was just startling to me.
That seems like so two divergent worlds right there.
But it was so amazing that I just couldn't imagine doing it,
right?
Because it was a mountain in front of me,
sure.
rather than something that it invited me in. And it wasn't until many years later that I really started to try to do it, and then I realized that I could do it, and the floodgates opened, and I've never stopped.
What would you say to your old self back then if you could like go back and talk to you?
Cheer up.
I didn't think that's what you were going to say.
I'd probably have a lot to say to that guy. In terms of what we're talking about,
yeah.
I would say, don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid.
Just do the work.
That's well. So I'm guessing you spend a lot of time on the road.
Yeah.
That can be tough. And talking about, you know, the difference between rock and roll and Sondheim seems like a stark different. Those are like two completely different worlds.
Company has some, I mean, you know, rock and roll. But
I'm talking about that.
There's some worst sounding electric piano in the REI.
I guess I'm really talking more the community or the world of rock and roll versus the world of musical theater. Yeah.
Well, I think it came from the fact that I already had an attraction to musicals.
Right. What's your favorite musical?
Oh.
Yeah, we're a hard-hitting journalistic show
top
here.
Five or something, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we
said. Okay, give me your top five or top two.
There's Gypsy, West Side Story.
The first musical I ever saw was West Side Story.
My favorite Sondheim score. Maybe it's not the best show, but my favorite Sondheim score is a little Night Music.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm a Merrily guy, but I love Night Music.
I like Merrily. Boy, what a bad turn it took. Well,
you know.
backwards.
Yeah. Well, that was actually...
But that chink.
Merrily opened like the same time the show that I did opened.
And which was what?
Oh, Brother.
Ooh, Brother.
Yeah, Oh, Brother opened, and both shows were slated to be big flops, and both shows were.
And she played...
I played the camel's ass.
That's right.
As listeners here know quite often.
That's the name of my band.
And you bear it with good grace.
I do. Burton, what's your...
And lest we forget, The Most Happy Fella.
I just played a little bit of that just the other day.
And Embarrassment of Riches.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous.
Yes. So, Burton, what's your story?
My story is... I loved music from a very early age, and like most people my age, I'm 62. The radio, I mean, pre-Beatles. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
One of the things that was great about when Rob and I were talking about when we came together as writing partners is that we found out we had like eerily similar tastes. I mean, I always tell this story, but it's true. We had the same favorite Leslie Gore song and the same favorite Prokofiev piece.
Oh,
no, that's
so
interesting.
You go, okay, this is going to work, you know. And the first thing that really attracted me, of all things, was like chord changes.
Yeah.
Like there would be a song and there would be this one moment in the song where it would go to the minor five and it would just kill me. And it was just a couple years before I even learned to play guitar at the age of 11 and realized what those chord progressions were. But that's what always drew me. And I didn't really draw a line between any music that I liked. So, you know, when I was growing up in the house and we had the cast album of My Fair Lady and the cast album of West Side Story in Oklahoma, well, I'd listen to that stuff and love it. I didn't really give it a second thought because you're too young to think about it.
Right. It's just music.
And then when rock happened in my life and I made a career out of it, you get more and more into revering the writers. The songwriter. Songwriting becomes obviously the central art of pop music. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you really get into the craft of songwriting and you revisit musical theater composers and lyricists, so you go, okay, well, there's a difference between a novel and a comic strip. It's just these guys are doing it at such an incredibly high level.
Right.
And so when I decided to do something else with my life, friends of mine said, you know, Bertie, you should get into musical theater. You love it, and you've got a skill set. You could probably do it. And two different people from two different parts of my life recommended the Lehman Engel workshop. And so I joined, and there was Rob. And
tell us what that workshop is.
Oh, well, there's
those that are not
familiar
with it.
There's a pretty well-known writer's workshop in New York called the BMI workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who started it was a pit conductor named Lehman Engel. And working on shows, he had devised for his own pleasure the aspects of shows that mean it's going to work and the aspects of shows that mean much more often they're not going to. And he developed this whole discipline of you should do this, you shouldn't do that. It has to have a want song. It's usually the second song in the show.
Right.
Lyrics should always point forward. Scenes should always point forward. The music is there to support.
Details.
Right, exactly.
Right.
And when you say about the disparate worlds of rock and, say, Sondheim, but the things we dearly love about a lot of our rock and songwriter heroes are not all that different.
Right.
We've got melody. We got harmony. We've got detailed lyrics. I was just listening to
Ray Davis.
I was just listening to a Paul Simon song the other day. The guy's details are just extraordinary.
Right.
It's so specific. And you're into the world like five words into the song. You know.
Well, and we're seeing in today's world, I mean, you've got Cyndi Lauper, you've got lots of people that have become music writers on Broadway, and they're getting a lot of really good critical acclaim for them.
Do you know, years ago, I'm talking about probably a decade or two ago, I said Cyndi Lauper should do, if they ever do a revival of Bells Are Ringing, she should do it. She'd be perfect.
Yeah. Yep.
Judy Holliday.
So, Burton, where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Valley, the San Fernando Valley, honored by Valley Girl. I grew up in a town called Van Nuys.
I have flown into Van Nuys Airport.
Why? no, I don't mean that it's a
I'm
dump.
A private pilot.
Not...
I've flown my own plane into Van Nuys. It's a very nice little airport.
Yeah, I grew up in the Valley. I've lived my whole life in Southern California. I live out by the beach at a place called Pacific Palisades with my girlfriend Jen and two dachshunds.
That's nice. What are the dachshunds' names?
They're named, the first one we adopted Winnie. We wanted to get Winnie a friend, and it would be a male.
Tell me you named him Pooh.
No, even better. We named him Fred. They're Winnie Fred.
Winnie Fred.
I'll show you pictures. You'll fall in love.
Lovely.
We had dachshunds growing up. We had Hansel, Gretel, and Pretzel.
Of course.
You know, dachshunds either have human names or German names.
Yes, yeah, true. or both.
My dog is named Conrad Birdie.
There you go.
We love you, Conrad.
Yes, we do.
Well, so let's just talk very briefly before we leave the confines of our backstage area. Mm-hmm. Let's talk more about Hell Drivers of Daytona, because first of all, we're not under the same confines of rules here backstage that we were on the air. So if you want to tell people that they have to come see it, you can. What didn't we talk about that we want to talk about this show?
It's funny. I can say that because we're not the book writers.
How big of a cast is it?
It's 10?
11.
11, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's 11. There is, you know, leading guy, leading gal, three doofus guys, three hot chicks, you know, and there's the villain, and then there's the sidekick of the leading guy, and the comic relief gal that he ends up being paired up with. I'd like to say that
shows that I have seen and cringed over, is that because we are rock guys, I wouldn't want anyone thinking that they're going to come and hear one of those shows where guys who write rock and roll songs just decide, hey, I can write a musical. Mm. I can just get a story and just stick some songs into it.
Right.
Right. I mean, this is a very, it's like I said, it's crazy on the outside, but the needle is threaded very finely throughout.
Which it really needs to.
Yeah, in terms of really making things click. And so our response to it thus far has always been really good, I think, because people come and they see much more of a show than they thought they were going to see, because of the cartoon imagery is really great, but it puts you in a certain, you know, you don't know exactly what to expect. But I think the surprise is that it's just a much better show than it could be.
Yeah.
I
think people's expectations are always problematic. And what happens is there are genres, And the easiest thing to do, we all do it, is you hear of a show and you try to imagine what type it is. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of shows that have had a rock score have been
depressing.
Well, there's that. There's the great line that I think Ben Brantley had where, oh no, they're about to sing at us again. Those kind of shows. But on the other end of the spectrum are campy, mm-hmm. for lack of a better
word. Right.
And that's really low expectations. That's really, it's a low ceiling where the songs aren't really even trying to be something that sticks to your ribs. They're just kind of fly by night and pass it on and for laughs, which is good because, you know, we try to get laughs in our songs too. But, that's always, you know, when you mention the cartoon aspect of our art, that would be a concern of mine, is that if they're trying to think, oh, I'll bet it's like such and such, dollars to donuts, we're not like such and such.
Like somebody says, oh, so like, it's like Grease?
Mm.
And I want to run out and throw myself into the traffic.
I'm with you on that one.
Which is too bad because we have a car song.
Well, you almost have to in that era.
It's like, well, it's a car show.
And it's a car show.
Sure. And you're going, oh, please don't say such and such. Please don't say such and such.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for joining us backstage.
This was awesome.
Pleasure.
And I wish you the best of luck in the rest of the endeavors and from UT all the way to Broadway, hopefully. That's right.
And you say
from
hi when
your
you
your lips.
Oh, you know I will. Oh, you know I will.
I hope so. Well, thank you for coming backstage.
Our pleasure.
We'll see you.
Monsieur Frederick, I'm just longing to meet her sometime.
She sparkles.
How pleasant.
She twinkles.
How nice.
Her youth is a sort of present.
Whatever the price.
The incandescent what the
light
of my love.